This is how you lose everything in 10 seconds. 1 second. This is the crucial one. This is the point in time when you could have slammed on the brakes and avoided the following 9 seconds, and all that came after. But you didn't, because you were inebriated. You had a few too many at the diner once again, and you ignored your wife's increasingly less subtle hints that you've probably had enough. Once again. 2. Janine shrieks, "Look out!" And you're finally hammering the brake pedal, but it's too late. Trucker was nodding at the wheel and he blew right through the red light. The ass end of his trailer is directly in your path. 3. You remember the recall notice in a great blinding flash of oh holy fuck. Something about the airbags or the sensors that made them go off. You never got around to getting it done. Because fuck it, right? Just like the 6 beers with your nachos and wings tonight, drinking them all down to drown out the world. Because fuck it. 4. The impact. Your airbag slams into your guts as you fly forward in your seat. The seatbelt locks tight against your sudden momentum and leaves you with a bruise across your chest. These are the only injuries you will sustain in this accident. A deep bruise, bloody nose. 5. And 6. Your car spins away from the trailer and slams over a curb, rolling over 360 degrees on its hood and sliding to a shuddering halt in someone's front yard. 7. A moment of complete silence. Your mind is blank. You have no idea what just happened. 8. Clarity sets in. And it's awful. 9. You turn to your wife, and for an entire second, you simply can't comprehend what you're looking at. Just too terrible. Janine's airbag did not deploy. You collided with the trailer at slightly less than 70 miles an hour, and the impact was devastating. Your wife's seatbelt wasn't enough to save her, not by a long shot. Janine's brain is leaking from her skull. Janine is dead. 10 seconds and onward, you scream her name in a giant braying sob that tears at your throat. You do it again. And a third time. And then you're just wordlessly screaming. Can't stop screaming. I'm pretty sure this is a dream. Everything looks just a little bit off kilter, and nothing makes any sense. I'm walking into an elevator, and John's already waiting for me. I don't know John. But I know his name. I know that I don't care for the man. It's his smile, I think. He has a mean, lopsided little smirk on his face. I get the distinct impression that John doesn't care much for me, either. The elevator is an enormous box of stainless steel. It gleams almost mercilessly in the fluorescent lighting. There's a rectangular display of numbered buttons besides the door. I go to push some arbitrary number and realize I can't move. John has one of my feet pinned under the sole of his shoe. I say, "John, you're standing on my foot." And I hear a high-pitched ping from somewhere above the ceiling. The elevator lurches, and we're abruptly plummeting down the elevator shaft, two men who hate each other in a plunging metal coffin. There's a new button on the wall, a big red one that's labeled Arrest Rapid Descent. I strain to reach it with an outstretched finger, but John is standing on my foot, and he feels like he weighs a ton. I shout at him, "John, get off my fucking foot!" "My right to stand here," John says. He shrugs at me and grins some more. There's a sick, weightless feeling in my gut. Gravity is hauling us to our doom. I shake my head in disbelief and snarl, "What the hell are you talking about? You're on my fucking foot!"
"My choice," he says. "This is where I decide to stand."
"I'm trying to save us!" I screech into his face. And he laughs.
"Don't care," he says. "I'm standing where I want to stand."
Something isn't right. We haven't hit bottom yet. How tall can this building possibly be? If you get off my foot, I can save us. Do you see the button? John looks in the opposite direction and titters. What button? It's starting to get hot. We're plummeting. Down. Down. Ever downward into the abyss. In desperation, I sock him in the jaw and break my hand. John is made of stainless steel. John is part of the elevator. I scream and repeatedly lunge to push the button. The walls are starting to glow red. I can smell the hairs in my nostrils curling in the heat, and I know this isn't a dream. It's a nightmare, and I can't wake up. My skin is starting to sizzle. We're falling to our annihilation. And I can't reach the button. Because John is standing on my foot. It will come exploding over the horizon any time now. A flash of light that will cleave the sky in two and boil the blood in your veins. There'll be nothing left in its wake. Shot the kids in the back of the head while they were watching TV. They didn't know it was coming, not the fire, and certainly not the bullets. You did it. Because it was a mercy. You did it because you loved them. Now you sit on the porch with a beer in your hand, the revolver in the other, and you wait for the inevitable. Any time now, a blast of superheated air will ignite the very air around you in a lake of hellfire 100,000 feet deep. You'll see the light, you'll see your bones through your skin, then your eyes will burst in twin jets of steam and you'll see nothing at all. You swig down some beer and you wipe the sweat off your forehead with the back of your other hand. It's starting to get hot out here. It's coming. Might not arrive for a few more minutes, and it might happen in the next heartbeat. You don't know. All you know is that it's coming any time now. There'll be nothing left in its wake. Everything that you have ever known will be darkness and void in the airless vacuum of space. How? Why? Where? All these questions will remain unanswered, and they no longer matter. The only question that remains is if you'll have time to pull the trigger before you ignite like a matchstick. It'll come any time, though. You drink your beer and you watch the horizon. You wonder if there'll be an afterlife. You wonder if there'll be time to scream before your lungs crumple to ash. You wonder if there'll be time. The vice president of marketing was droning on and on in front of a pie chart on the projection screen, and Kevin couldn't possibly care less. The boardroom was too hot, and there was an unpleasant odor floating around in the stale, heavy air. Something smelled bad. Something smelled downright fucking rotten. Sales are down by 9% in the first quarter, the VP was saying, and then dropped to 12% by the end of June. We need an infusion of new life, people. We need... Kevin tuned him out and looked around the table at the others, trying to determine if anyone else was silently choking on the rancid smell. He saw a circle of stiff collars and glazed, unfocused eyes. No one was paying attention to the VP. They were all staring off into space and some neutral, slack expression on their faces, patiently waiting for further instructions. Hot blood, the VP mumbled, and Kevin rubbed his temples. Fresh blood. We need to identify... Kevin noticed a fly crawling around the VP's forehead. He watched with mounting horror as it crawled in and out of his ears, then casually strolled up the man's left nostril as he buzzed and burbled on about the need for new ideas and fresh perspectives. After a minute or so, the fly exited via his right nostril flew away.
So now I turn to all of you, the VP said, and I ask you this. Who among us can make that sacrifice and feed this new purpose? Who is it?
The others moaned, and as one, they swiveled in their chairs to face Kevin. He can, someone said. It was Marianne from accounting. Her lips twitched uncontrollably, exposing a patchy row of blackened teeth.
Kevin pushed back his chair and lunged for the door. It was locked. He rattled the door in its frame and turned to face them, his heart pounding in his chest. His co-workers were shuffling towards him in a staggering line, a wall of empty stares and rotten teeth. Marianne from accounting stepped on the hem of her long dress, and it slowly pulled down as she staggered onward, exposing a long autopsy scar that ran between her breasts and clear down her pubic bone. "Fresh meat," they chanted. "Fresh meat, hot blood. Fresh meat, hot blood." Kevin shrieked as the mob surrounded him. They fell upon him in a snarling, clawing knot, and the VP switched to a new slide. He smeared blood across the screen from his chewed-up stump of a hand. "Sweeping reform," he gurgled. One of his eyeballs slid out of its socket. "Slash and burn. Come on, people, show me what you can do. Fresh meat, hot blood. Go get him." The door was no longer locked. They all lurched into the corridor looking for fresh meat with a single-minded determination, seeking hot blood and new ideas. The vice president heard the screaming. He grinned his cadaverous grin at the projector screen.
"Budget cuts," he said. "Cutthroat investments. Show us what you can do, people."
Hey there, kids, it's me, Mr. Creepypasta, and I wanted to tell you all thank you so much for listening to tonight's story, or watching tonight's story if you're on YouTube. If you're not on YouTube, that means you're probably on the podcast that's available on iTunes, on the Google Play Store, and is now actually available on Spotify, and doesn't use as much data. So, hey, that's a thing. If you guys aren't listening on YouTube or Spotify, then I have no idea how else you could have found me. Unless you found one of those books on Amazon. You know, the Creepypasta Collection, Volume 1, Volume 2. Those are things, too. Oh, well. I don't know how you would have heard me there, seeing as this was recorded, like, 2 years after those came out. Well, anyway. Thanks for listening, folks. And sweet dreams.